Mr. Brian, you start there with your window.
I was taking a walk.
All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So first I want to take the opportunity to welcome everyone back. Hopefully everyone had a restful Pesach, an enjoyable Pesach, a meaningful, maybe not restful, but hopefully enjoyable, meaningful, uplifting, as well as the little bit of time afterwards. It's a pleasure to be back. Welcome to everyone who's joining us online as well. Hashem, our online classroom is growing. And really, Halavai, we should just be zocha to Mir Hashem have a wonderful couple of weeks of learning together. Amen. I also just want to take the opportunity to wish a mazel tov to Leah Miller on the occasion of her engagement. Mazel tov, mazel tov. Okay, so we begin this week with the double parsha, Parshios Achrimos and Kedoshim. First of all, our shir tonight is dedicated by Rita and Sai Bayek, in memory of Rebecca Bayek, Chaya Bela Bas Aron Do, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama will have an aliyah. So what I'd like to focus your attention on is one simple pasuk. One pasuk. Normally we deal with complex questions that are built upon many different psukim and many different ideas, different contrasting, different mitzvos. Tonight we're going to focus on one simple pasuk, but as you're going to see, this one pasuk is anything but simple. Number one. This comes from the first pasuk of the second of our double parshios. Daber al kol hadas b'nei Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, speak to the assembly, speak to the Jewish people. Va'amar t'aleim and say to them, Kedoshim tihiyu. You should be holy. Ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokecha. For I, Hashem, your God, am holy. What we are going to focus on tonight is what is the meaning of this command. What does it mean, Kedoshim tihiyu? You see, what's interesting about this is the following. I don't even have to take a poll, because I know that if I were to ask, raise your hand if you want to be holy, there's no question. Okay, thank you. Right? There's no question, right? All of the hands would obviously go up. Every single one of us wants holiness. Every single one of us wants to in some way acquire Kedusha. But if you ask someone to define, so what does that mean? What does it mean to be holy? How do you actualize the principle of holiness? That's where the concept becomes a little bit more ambiguous, amorphous, and difficult to wrap your head around. But yet, it seems to be a mitzvah in the Torah. It seems to be, whether or not it's one of the Taryag mitzvahs, the 613 we'll discuss, but it's clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not just giving us a piece of good advice, he's giving us a religious, spiritual mandate. And thus, it behooves us to try to understand, what does it mean to be kadosh? How does one actualize the obligation to be kedoshim tihiyu? So, time permitting, we're going to try to go through 8 different approaches. They're short, don't worry. So the first, I'm going to try to start with the ones that are more well-known. Take a look at number 2. So Rashi HaKadosh comments and he says, kedoshim tihiyu. Heve prushim min ha'arayos u'min ha'avera. You know what it means? It means separate yourself from immorality and from sin. Shekomakom sha'ata moti geder erba, ata moti kedusha. Because wherever you put up a protective boundary around immorality, that's where you will find kedusha. See, interestingly enough, according to Rashi, the way that Rashi, and this is Rashi quoting the Medrash, quoting the Gemara as well, that Kedusha, how do you find holiness in life? Holiness, according to Rashi, comes from sexual morality. From being a moral individual, by definition, abstaining from any type of illicit immorality. Now you'll ask, where does Rashi get that from? Right? Where, meaning, why, out of all the definitions you could have chosen, why, I mean, no one's going to argue with that, that obviously, being a moral person, specifically in the realm of sexuality, of course, is going to engender Kedusha. But remember, here, we're trying to define a very important term. This becomes the mantra of Judaism, Kedoshin Tiyu. So how does Rashi understand that it means make sure to be separate and apart from immorality? So the answer is quite simple. Because remember, at the end, this is a double parsha. So at the end of Parshas Acharimos, which is the first parsha we read this week, what does the Torah discuss? Take a look at number 3. The last section of Parshas Acharimos is Ish Ish El She'er Bisaro Lo Sikrevu Lagalos Erva Ani Hashem. No man shall come near to any of his close relatives to uncover their nakedness. I am the Lord. The end of Parshas Acharimos deals with all of the illicit unions, deals with all of the laws of immorality, all the forbidden relationships. Therefore, if you're Rashi, what do you see? What do you see? You see the juxtaposition. So here at the end of Parshas Acharimos, Torah tells me about all of the prohibitions regarding immorality. And then immediately after that, the Torah says, Kedoshim Tiyu. Says Rashi, juxtapositions are not accidental. They're not haphazard. If there is this juxtaposition, it must mean that how do I become Kadosh? How do I become holy? Morality. Morality, or perhaps better stated, to abstain or to distance myself from anything that is immoral. That's our first approach. Kedoshim Tiyu, Hevi Prushim and Arayos, separate yourself from immorality. Okay? Approach number 2, which is the Ramban, also a very well-known approach. So the Ramban writes, 4 Aleph, Lefi Da'ati, Ein HaPrishos Hazu Lifrosh Min Ha'arayos Kedivri Harav. So the first thing that Rashi says is, the first thing the Ramban says is, Rashi, I disagree with you. It can't be that Kedoshin Tihiyu is just about immorality. Now, why? If you're the Ramban, why is that so? Because abstaining from immorality, you know, when we think about Kedoshin Tihiyu, so how do you envision Kedusha in your mind? I'm going to tell you how you envision it. Right? I'm giving you all a break this first week. Right? The way you envision it is that Kedusha is like this lofty level of spirituality. It's this lofty level of an incredibly infused spiritual life. So Rashi says, you know how you become Kadosh? Abstain from immorality. The Ramban says, that doesn't make any sense. You abstain from immorality, you know why? All right, come on, people, you should know why, right? Why do we abstain from immorality? Okay, that's always a safe answer. Good, Hashem said so. Good. Because otherwise, you are an immoral person. Right? Again, it's not rocket science. You're in a... You can't get anywhere in life if you are not a moral person. Again, the code of morality is dictated by the Torah. So Ramban says, I don't understand. Of course I have to study from Arayos. I have to study from immorality. The Torah tells me, and if I engage in Arayos, remember, you know, if there's one thing we know, that a code of sexual morality is necessary to build any ethical society. If you don't have that by definition, everything else begins to implode. And history clearly shows that. So says the Ramban, Kedoshin Tiyu has to be more than just simply be moral. Be moral is just the ABCs of Judaism. So what is Kedoshin Tiyu? He goes on. Aval haprishus hi hamuzkeres b'chomakum b'talmud sheba'alein nikra prushim. Rather, says the Ramban, you know what Kedoshin Tiyu? You know what it means to be holy? To be holy means prushim, means to be separate. Look at base, 4 base. V'ha'inyon, Shabbat says, you know, Judaism, as Rav Soloveitchik calls it, has an interesting dialectic, has an interesting seesaw. On one hand, we're told that certain things you're not allowed to do. So, for example, we're not allowed to engage in immorality, using this example for just a moment. But yet, what does the Torah mandate? The Torah, on the other hand, doesn't mandate celibacy. So you see that on one hand, certain types of we'll call it sexual behavior are illicit, but yet other types are absolutely permitted. So says the Ramban, it's interesting because if you look at other cultures, the categorizations are much more black and white. So in other cultures or other religions, so for example, sexuality in general is frowned upon. It's frowned upon. It's considered to be an accommodation. It's a man's desires. In Judaism, says the Ramban, it's not like that. In Judaism, there are certain things that are asr, but there are many other things that are also mutter. So says the Ramban, what does it mean? He says, "Im ken yimatzei ba'al tayba mokom lios shoto v'zimas ishto ol nosha parabos v'lios b'sovai yayin b'zozuli basamos." He gives another example. Meat and wine. Meat and wine. Are you allowed to eat meat and wine?
Yeah.
Good. Can you eat meat and wine for breakfast?
Yeah.
Can you eat it for lunch?
Yeah.
Can you eat it for dinner?
Yeah.
Brunch?
Yeah.
Midnight snack? Okay, you see how I'm going. Yes. So says Ramban. But is that appropriate? Is that type of eating behavior, we would call that gluttony, right? Excessive. So the question is, but yet on one hand, if you ask me, is there anything wrong with it? No. Can't tell you there's anything wrong with it. Is there an isser? No. Is it right, says Ramban? Absolutely not. This leads the Ramban ultimately to a new definition. He says, Vihine, if you look at the last couple of lines in Beis, Vihine yihye novel birshus haTorah. The Ramban says, it is very easy to exploit technical Judaism. What's technical Judaism? Technical Judaism is, right, some people do this, unfortunately, right? Is it mutter or is it asr? And if you tell me if it's not usr, then if it's not usr, then it must mean what? Then it's mutter, right? Which is a very logical argument. If it's not, there's only two options. Either it's usr or it's mutter. If it's not usr or it's not prohibited, then it's got to be mutter. Says the Ramban, absolutely wrong. Absolutely wrong. Because that's what's called the novel birshus haTorah. A novel birshus haTorah is one who essentially exploits the technical loopholes of mechanistic Judaism. So you can become a novel is a glutton. A glutton, a person could become a biblically sanctioned glutton. How so? By essentially not engaging in things that are prohibited, they're all technically permitted, but at the same time, I also know clearly that they're not right. So look at letter Gimel. Lefichach, boha kosov acharei sheparat ha'isurim she'asur osam adam, right? Therefore, what does the Torah do? Right after in Parashas Acharemos, where the Torah gives us, for example, the laws of morality, all the things that are absolutely asr, v'tziva b'divrei klali, b'davar klali, sh'niye pirushim min hamutaros, v'yikadesh atzmo bazeh, ad she'yageh l'prishus. So Ramban advances an amazing definition, which we're going to see is not his originally. But Ramban essentially says, Ramban says, that kidoshim tihiyu means that in life, we don't draw our lines between that which is permitted and that which is prohibited, but rather what do? We pull in our borders a little bit. We put actually the fence down even in the realm of that which is permitted. In fact, if you take a look at number 5, so the Gemara says, Ela Amar Rava, this is the formulation that most of us are familiar with, Kadesh Atzmicha B'Motravach. Sanctify yourself with that which is permitted to you. So what does this mean according to the Ramban, according to the Gemara? Kidoshim Tihiyu means don't live a Judaic life that straddles the line between mutter and asr. Because first of all, a life like that is destined for failure for the simple reason that we're human beings. If you're walking the tightrope of Judaism your whole life, by definition, you're going to fall on the side of isr inevitable. So what does Kidoshim Tihiyu mean? Kidoshim Tihiyu means bolster yourself by setting up your protective boundaries in the realm of that which is permitted, which essentially means give up certain things that you may be permitted to do in order that you will not falter. So Ramban's example, can you eat meat and drink wine 3 meals a day? Some might posit that's even the breakfast and the lunch of champions, right? Can you do it? You can do it. But where is that going to lead you? What kind of person is that going to make you? Therefore, says Ramban Kedoshim, well, take a look at number 6 before, let me say it inside. Rav Moshe Chaim Mutzato, in his Sefer Mesilas Yesharim, talks about this concept. He has what's called the Shar HaPrishus, which is literally the gate. Prishus literally means abstaining or separation. So the Ramchal writes the following: "Vihine kala haPrishus, klal haPrishus, humasha amruzal kadesh atzmacha b'motolach v'zosi hora asa shal hamila atzma Prishus lo rotzalomar lios poreish umarchik atzma min adavar v'hainu." So says the Ramchal, really what the Gemara said, what the Ramban said, that what is Prishus, what is Kedusha? It means giving up something that is normally permitted. Now, what's interesting about this is the following. Now, why would one do this? You see, today, unfortunately, there's a little bit of a craze about Chumras. Right? So sometimes people go too overboard with stringencies. What ends up happening is, unfortunately, there's sometimes an erroneous counter response to that, which is that people think that life is all about mutter and usser. And if it's not usser, then it's got to be mutter. What Ramchal would do, what Ramban said, is that there's a middle ground. Should a person take on every single stringency? No. But at the same time, is it important for each of us to give up certain things that are permitted to us? Absolutely. But you ask yourself why. So the Ramchal writes, continuing on, he says, "V'hakavana bazeh l'shelo yipaga be'isr atzmo." Obviously, number one is that, if you straddle the line between mutter and usser, inevitably, you will fall on the side of isr, on the side of prohibition at some point. "V'ha'inyon shekol davar sheyuchal lihivalek mimeno gram asura, af api sha'achshav eno gorem lo, v'choshekin she'eno ramamish, yirchak v'yifrosh mimeno." So here, the Ramchal says something amazing. And Rav Soloveitchik also discusses in Ala Tshuva. It's important to know when a person sins. Let's say I do something wrong. So the klal gadol with sin, any type of sinful activity, is it doesn't just appear yesh me'ayin. It doesn't just appear out of nowhere. Sin is a result of a lifestyle. Sin is a result of multiple decisions that I have made up until this point. That result, sin is the result. Sin is not the primary factor. Sin is not the ingredient. Sin is what happens when I have too many negative ingredients in my stew of life. Then ultimately, I have a result of sin. So says the Ramchal, you know what successful living is? Successful living is not the avoidance of sin. Because if a person is thinking about avoidance of sin, I'm already a couple of steps too late. Successful living means identify the different influences in my life. And I ask myself the simple question, where will these influences lead me? Right now, they may be innocuous. Right now, they may be totally punk. Right now, they may be totally mutter. But the question is, if I allow them to remain in my life unchecked, where will they take me? You know, Chazal speak about this in Pirkei Avos when they say, "Ezu chacham, who is the one who is wise?" And the answer is, "Haroa es hanovat," one who is able to see the foreseeable consequences of his or her actions. Rav Soloveitchik discusses this just as an aside. I quoted this before in other shiurim. The Gemara writes that one of the people who does not have a chelik in olam haba, a portion of the world to come, is a masachik bukuvia, is the person, a professional gambler. Professional gambler, don't worry, if you participated in the sister trip to Atlantic City, you're still okay. Right? But the idea is, if somebody's a professional gambler, they don't have a portion of the world to come. Why? Because the Gemara says, because such a person contributes nothing to the benefit of society. And if you are useless to mankind, then you don't get olam haba. You have to do something for the world around you. Even if it's something small, you have to contribute in some positive way. So the Rambam writes, so how does the Masechet Bukuvia do tshuva? How does he do tshuva? So what does the Rambam say? He has to smash his dice. He has to smash his dice. So if Soloveitchik asks, he says, why does he have to smash his dice? Why can't he just simply go ahead, I don't know, put the dice on a high shelf, right? Or put them in the china closet. Like, why do you have to smash? What did the dice do? The dice aren't that fault. I'm at fault. So I'm putting the dice aside. So the Rav says, because as long as you have those dice in existence, the very factors that led you down the negative path of life are still present. And if you want to do tshuva, if you want to change, if you want a new start, it's not just enough to stop the negative behavior. I have to identify all of the factors that contributed to that behavior. And I have to get rid of those also. Because if I just try to stop the gambling, that's not enough. What? How did I get into this? How did my life come to this point? So what's happening over here is something so profound. When the Ramban comes along, the Ramban, the Gemara, Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Litzato, when they see Kiddush in Tiyu, you know what the Torah is telling us? Kadesh atzmecha b'mutalach. Go ahead. And yes, draw your lines not between mutter and asr, bless you. But you have to sometimes in life give up some things that are permitted. But why? We're Jews. There's enough stuff that's already prohibited. Why do we have to give up more stuff that's permitted? It's not for the sake of suffering. It's not for the sake of a chumrah. What is it for? What permitted things are we giving up? We're giving up those permitted things that although right now may seem innocuous, I know full well that long term, they're not good for me. Long term, they're going to bring me down. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get out in front of it. I'm not going to wait until the downward spiral of negative activity begins. Instead, I'm going to proactively identify the things that can exert a negative impact on me, and I'm going to purge myself of them now. Says the Ramban, that's Kidoshim Tihyu. Proactively looking at my life, looking at the things that are now permitted, but ultimately will lead me down a bad path and saying, no, thank you. I'm not interested in that. I want to proactively set my life on the right trajectory. Take a look at number 7. Rav Hirsch. So Sham Shofar Rav Hirsch begins a little bit like the Ramban, but then goes in a different direction. So Rav Hirsch writes in number 7, he says, Kiddusha is the product of completest mastery by the godlike free-willed human being over all his forces and natural tendencies, with the allurements and inclinations associated with them, and placing them at the disposal of God's will. This mastery over one's self, the highest possible art which human beings can practice, does not consist of neglecting, curtailing, killing, or doing away with any of one's powers or natural tendencies. Paragraph B. No single one of the powers, natural tendencies which are given to man is either good or bad in itself, from the most spiritual down to the most sensuous. They are all given to him for beneficial purposes to accomplish God's will on earth. So Hirsch says something very beautiful. Hirsch says, you know what Kiddusha is? Kiddusha is taking all of my kokos, taking all of my abilities, all of my drives, all of my desires, and channeling them in a positive way that is going to bring me closer to God. But Hirsch says something amazing. There is no drive in man. There is no desire in man that can't be used for the positive. Sometimes, you know, there's the famous Gemara. So the Gemara brings down that certain people were born with a disposition for bloodshed. So the Gemara discusses, for example, if you're born in Ma'adim, right, which is under the sign of Mars, right, or a person was born with a ruddy complexion. So the Gemara says that's a simen, that a person's going to be a shofeh thamim, a spiller of blood. So when you see that, it's very jarring. So what does the Gemara say? Okay, all we said is you're going to spill blood. What doesn't the Gemara say? What kind of blood you're going to spill, right? So the Gemara says a person could be a murderer, chas v'shalom, or a person could be a mole, a person could be a butcher, a person could be a doctor, a person could be a whole variety of different things. So sometimes, again, it means that we might be born with certain innate predispositions or proclivities, but Kedoshim Tihyu means that whatever drives, desires, kokos we have as people, it's my job to find a way to somehow channel it into the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I have an obligation to sublimate everything that makes me, into the service of God. And I want to tell you, the beauty of this refresh is an incredible relief. I always breathe a sigh of relief when I see this refresh. Why? Because sometimes we think that we have to change ourselves. Sometimes we think that we have needles that we have to get rid of, that we have to purge ourselves. And the truth is, you know, the Ramchal, Ramosh Chaim Letzato writes in his introduction to Mizlah Sisharim, that it is easier to learn Kol HaTorah Kula, easier to learn the entire Torah than it is to change one character trait. And I think the idea that the Persian is conveying is you don't have to purge yourself of anything. What sometimes we have to do is rechannel our energies. Sometimes we need to sublimate it in a somewhat of a different way. So a person has a problem with kas, a person has a problem with anger. So so sometimes we have to stop getting angry. Okay, that's a very nice etzah, but it doesn't help a person who has an anger problem. They'll get angry at you for telling them to stop getting angry. Right? So what does a person do? What does anger represent? What does anger represent? Right? Anger is passion. Anger is passion. Right? And a person has a very bad temper, that's a passionate person. Their problem is not their anger. Their problem is they're misdirecting their passion. Put your passion into some type of positive outlet. Right now you're using it to destroy people, to destroy yourself. Harness that energy. You know, the Chazon Ish writes, he says this with the idea that Avram Avinu, how is it that Avram Avinu became such a monotheist? Right? Avram Avinu grew up in a culture of idolatry and a culture of rampant immorality. So the Chazon Ish says something amazing. He says, you know what immorality is? Immorality means you love too many people a little too much. But there's a lot of love in the world in an immoral society. What do you have to do? You have to harness it. What did Avraham Avinu do? Avraham Avinu harnessed the love of immorality And he literally used it to build relationships. Idolatry, the Chazon Ish writes, people think that we're in a higher level now because we no longer worship idolatry. So the question is, it's not true. At least when people worship idols, at least it meant they had a desire to connect to something bigger than themselves. Today, says the Chazon Ish, we're content with that. We're just connecting with ourselves. Avraham Avinu took that energy, that desire to connect with something bigger, and he harnessed it into monotheism. That's what the Persian is saying. Kitoshim Tiyu is the art of sublimation, is the art of channeling. Yes, I have to identify the things that I'm doing wrong, and then I have to figure out how to take all of those kohos that right now are being wasted on sinful activity, and I have to figure out a way to channel it in a more positive fashion. Approach number four, which is number eight on your sheet. Rabbeinu Bechai writes, "Be talking the farish kedushim to you, zu kedushas hamachshava." So here, Rabbeinu Bechai writes that what is kedushim to you? Purity of thought, which is interesting, right? Because now everyone else is really talking about actions. That Rabbeinu Bechai understands that no actions. That's clear. The Torah mandates actions. Kedushim to you is an additional level where man is not just obligated to have pure actions, but a person even has to be metaher their thoughts. Which, of course, is a very difficult level because we know it's much easier to modify and monitor your behavior than it is to go ahead and monitor and cleanse one's thoughts. But says Rabbeinu Bechai, that's the mandate of Kedoshim Tiyu. Approach number, I think I skipped an approach.
Yeah, five.
Okay, so this should be number five. This should be number five, which is number nine on your sheet. I'm sorry, Rav Chaim Paltiel. So Rav Chaim Paltiel, and I've put a little biography for you over here as well. Rav Chaim Paltiel writes, Kedoshim Tiyu, Lomar, and this is quite fascinating as well, Im Adam Mishamer Atzlo Min HaChet, Shuv Ein Chet Va'avera Ba'ol Yodo, U'makdishin also, listen to these words, if a person guards oneself from sin, and does not sin, you know what happens? He will no longer be tempted with sin. Lomar, in Nishmar Beis Pamim, if a person guards themselves from sinning twice, Shuv Ein Ochot, a person will no longer sin, Umikachin oso lamalo, they will sanctify him from above. Kida Amar, bolitaher misayin oso. As the Gemara says, that when someone wants to become pure, God aids him in the purification process. What does this mean? Take a look at number 10. The Balaturim writes, well, actually skip to number 11. Get to the source. So the Gemara says something amazing. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kevan sheyatsu rov shnosov shal adna velo chata, Shuv Eino Chote. So Rabbi Chiya bar Abba makes an interesting statement. He says, when the majority of your years have passed and you have not sinned, good news, you're not going to sin anymore. Of course, the difficulty with this is, right? But first of all, it's contradicted by other statements of Chazal, like, Al Ta'min Ba'atzmecha Yom Osecha. But the other problem is, no one really knows their lifespan, which is kind of part of the point. Right? But his idea, you'll see where that, Shnei Marali Chasid of Yishma. The Bei Rabbi Shila Amri, if a person is tempted with sin and resists the temptation once and resists the temptation a second time and avoids sin both those times, shuv eino chote. There is a promise that a person will not fall prey to that sin. Shene'emar raglei chasidov yishmar. Because the pasuk says, the feet of his righteous ones, of his pious ones, he will go ahead and guard. So this Gemara could be understood in a number of different ways. It could be understood in a spiritual fashion, right? That perhaps if a person demonstrates, which is what Rav Chaim Paltiel said also, a voluntar messiah also. You know, the amazing part in life is, if we really think about it, we come to realize that we can't do anything without God. We need HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything. So it could be saying is, that if I do my part and resist sin twice, I'm tempted twice, I resist sin twice, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give me siyat lishma, will give me divine assistance and providence and help me to avoid any future sin. That's on the spiritual explanation. There could be a simpler behavioral explanation that when you modify your behaviors, those modifications, if they are sustained, will stick. Behavioral modification is possible. I can choose the kind of person I want to be. I might not be able to always control what I think, but I can absolutely always control what I do. And what the Gemara seems to be saying is that if I make the active decision not to sin, you know what will happen over time? What happens? It becomes part of my nature not to sin. Just like there are certain things that we would never think of doing. Why? Because we are accustomed to assuming those things are outside of our, you know, the Abarbanel brings down on the mitzvah of lo sachmot, of not to covet. So the Abarbanel says, how could a Kodesh Baruch Hu tell us not to covet? Right? After all, it's such a natural reaction. You see something that someone else has that you want. So the Abarbanel gives an incredible explanation. He says, you know, if there's a monarch, say, you know, Queen Elizabeth. So Queen Elizabeth has, you know, royal jewelry. So no one ever says to themselves, I wish I had Queen Elizabeth's diamond necklace. Right? I'm assuming that's correct, right? Right? Like, no one ever, why does no one ever say that? Because the Queen's jewels, they're not even shaykh to me. I have absolutely no connection to that. So you only covet something that you have a connection to. So the Abarbanel says that if you go ahead and you view another person's possessions, like the Queen of England's jewels, then by definition, those are out of my reach. And if they're out of my reach, then by definition, no coveting occurs. Why am I telling you this? Because what the Abarbanel goes on to say is, you could condition yourself to think this way. Behavioral conditioning is an effective tool for the cultivation of spirituality. So here you have Rav Chaim Paltiel Baal Turim saying, you know what? You know how to become a holy person? Very profound. Stop sinning. Stop sinning. And you know what happens when you stop sinning? Ultimately, that will become your second nature. And the more that becomes your second nature, that's where kedoshim to you occurs. So what's interesting according to this approach, this we'll call it approach number 6, even though it's really only our fifth approach, is that as opposed to the other opinions who understood kedoshim to you as something that you are supposed to do, Rav Chaim Paltiel, the Baal HaTurim, and the Gemara ultimately understand kedoshim to you as a state of being. A state of being that simply avoid sin. Avoid sin, and what is the effect, what is the result of avoidance of sin? What happens if you avoid sin? Kedoshim to you. That by definition, you are in a state of kedusha. Okay, take a look at number 12. So the Aruch Chaim goes in a totally different approach to this. So remember, up until now, everyone understood kedoshim to you as something you have to do. Either something you have to do actively or something you have to hold yourself back from. The Aruch Chaim comes along and says, and this is going to blow you away. He says, number 12, kedoshim to you. Tzarech ladas, mahu hamukhuven shel mitzvah zu. What is the essence of this mitzvah? What does it mean? He says, al derech omrim zal, Yashav Adam below Avar Adera, Nostim Los Scharka Ose Mitzvah. So the Gemara makes an incredible statement. If a person sits and does not go ahead and commit an Adera, you get reward as if you committed a mitzvah. I'm going to put this in the advertising for this year. Right? Come, sit for an hour, and not only do you get the shir, but you'll also get schar, because nobody's doing any Averas. Right? So you literally, if you don't do an Adera, then by definition you get schar as if you committed a mitzvah, as if you performed the mitzvah. V'zeu mama, cause of kedoshim to you. The mitzvos I say, v'va avir li yadosh yisrach higmas also. U'bazeh kayim mitzvos I say, shenitzav mama kedoshim to you. So the Chaim comes to something amazing. He says, you know what kedoshim to you means? Kedoshim to you means the absence of sin. Live your life in a state of absence of sin. Make sure you don't sin. And as long as you're not sinning, then by definition what? I am in a state of kedoshim to you. He goes on. Skip a little bit. He says, "Ulatam ze dikdik lomar al kol adas bnei Yisrael lomar ki mitzvah zu she mitzvah kedoshim tiyu ki mitzvah she yeshna bechol adam." Now, what the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh picks up on is in number one, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu relays this mitzvah to Moshe Rabbeinu, he used lashon of daber al kol adas bnei Yisrael. Now, there are different words that are used throughout the Chumash to refer to the Jewish people. Some of them refer to Jewish men. Some of them refer to Jewish women. Some of them refer to Jewish men and women. Adas means everyone. Adas means everyone. So it says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh something amazing. Kedoshim to you simply means abstain from sin. And as long as you abstain from sin, then by definition, what am I? I am in a state of active holiness. Dabra kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Why? Because everyone is capable of achieving holiness. Not everybody is capable of achieving every single thing. Not everybody is capable of performing every single mitzvah. Not everybody is capable of accomplishing every spiritual feat. But to abstain from sin and therefore become kadosh, that is something that everybody is able to do. Now, why is this amazing? Because according to this Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, it teaches us a profound lesson, which is that if abstention from sin, abstaining from sin, by definition creates kedoshim tihyu, then what does that teach me about me? It teaches me that our natural state is kedusha. You see, often we think that holiness is something we have to become. Holy is something we have to acquire. We assume that we start from a position of unholiness. We assume that we start from a position of just being a tabula rasa, of nothing, blank slate. Says Erchaim, it's actually not true. We actually start life with abundant kedusha, abundant holiness. What's our mission in life? Right? Don't mess it up. Our job in life is we are born with every single thing we need. Nurture it, preserve it, help it grow. We don't have to acquire anything. Everything we need is already within. Just don't schmaltz it up, says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. And that's why he says, kedoshim tihyu means, you want to know what it means? It means don't sin. Because as long as you abstain from sin, the natural default position of the Jew is kedusha. So if we summarize, so this, like I said, this is very different than everything we've seen before, because everyone until this approach has been telling, says kedoshim tihyu is something you have to do. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, even in the previous approach, Aruch Chaim Baltiel, the Baal Tumim, the Gemara, even though again they were talking about abstaining from sin, that was talking about an active struggle against sin. If I overcome the urge to sin twice, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm in a state of kedusha. The Aruch Chaim says, no, you don't have to do anything. All you need to do is don't mess yourself up. Don't engage in sin. Don't spiritually sully myself. And then by definition, I'm in a state of kedusha. So these are our first, I mean, now it's really only six approaches. So just to review, what do we have so far? So we have Rashi telling us that kedusha, I'm not going to quiz you. I'll just go through them quickly. So you have Rashi HaKadosh telling us that kedushin tzi upwards you. Means what? Means what? Morality. Morality. Sexual morality. A person has to maintain a code of morality. Ramban, Gemara, Ramchal, kedushin tzi means what? Don't draw your lines between mutter and usser, but everyone in life has to give up even the positive things. If I don't, those positive things are ultimately going to lead me down a negative road. Get in front of your life and identify the things that are already going to bring you down. Don't wait till they bring you down to purge them from your existence. Identify them proactively. Get rid of them before they have a chance to bring you down. That's kedoshim tihyu. Rav Hirsch, third approach, sublimation. There is no drive, desire, or koach in man that has to be purged. Everything just has to be channeled in the right way. That's kedusha. Rav Eina B'chai, kedoshim tihyu, purity of thought. Rav Chai Paltiel, balaturim, gemara. Kedoshim tihyu means put up the fight to avoid sin, and you will see that once you do that, what will occur? Kadosh Baruch Hu will help you, and Kedushin to you will come your state of being. Aruch Chaim HaKadosh is different than everyone else. Kedushin to you is not something you have to do, but rather what? Kedushin to you is the result, the resulting state of abstaining from sin. Avoid the spiritual contaminant of sin, and by definition, the state of being of the Jew is Kedusha. Which then leads us now to our last approach for tonight. So I want to show you something very interesting. If you look at number 13, so there's another pasuk, a few prokim earlier in Vayikra. So the Torah says, it's actually speaking about by the laws of kashrus. So the Torah says, after it tells you all about the animals you can't eat, so the Torah says, Ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, v'hiskadishtem. His kaddish tem, thank you. The yisem kidoshin, ki kadosh ani. So what does the Torah say? I am Hashem your God. You shall sanctify yourself and become holy. Ki kadosh ani, because I am holy. Velo sitam u es nafsho sechem. V'chol hasheres hashoreitz al ha'aret. Excuse me, v'chol hasheres haromeis al ha'aret. And do not defile yourself with any creeping creature that crawls on the ground. Now, why is this pasuk of interest to us tonight? Because first of all, if you'll notice, what word is in here? Kedoshim. Now I want to draw your attention to something very fascinating. So if you look at this pasuk, if I were to ask you, based on number 13, how do you become kadosh? Right. Avoiding bad things. In this case, it'll be a shrotzin. Hey, so you see, leaving aside, so now it's a little bit less dramatic because you saw the Aruch Chaim already, but leave aside the Aruch Chaim for just a moment. If you contrast this pasuk with the opening pasuk from our parasha, we seem to have two contradictory ideas. Our parsha begins by telling us kedoshim tihyu. which is an active state of being, which sounds like God is commanding us to rise above the mundanity of existence. God is commanding us to become something magnificent. What, how, when, where, that will have, that we saw all the various approaches. But Kedusha seems to be something meaning, something resulting from going above and beyond. And yet in number 13, how is Kedusha defined? The avoidance of creepy, crawly things, right? Which doesn't sound so hard, right? And again, you don't have to limit it to creepy, crawly things. You could just say that Kedusha seems to come by the avoidance of negative things, right? So our parsha seems to highlight the idea that Kedusha comes as a result of positive dynamic activity versus over here in Vayikra, where the Torah seems to be telling us that what? That Kedusha is a result of the avoidance of something negative. So how do we reconcile the two ideas? Let's take a look at number 14. There's an interesting Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says, Akavya ben Mahalalel Omer. Akavya ben Mahalalel used to say, Histakel b'shlosha dvarim v'yato abali v'yaveira. Look at three things, and you will not come to sin. What are the three things? Do me'ayin basa. Where did you come from? Ula'an ata ho'ech. Where are you going? Ulifnei mi'ata osir li'tein din b'cheshvan. And to, in front of whom are you going to have to give a final accounting? So then he goes on, Me'ayin basa, where do we come from? Mitipas rucha, a putrid drop. Ula'an atahalech, and where are we going? Lemakam afar rima vitolea, to a place of dirt and worms. Lifting the earth. Ulifnei mi'ata osir li'tein din b'cheshvan. And in front of whom are we going to have to give a final accounting? Lifnei melech machem loch makodesh baruch. Before God. Before God. Now if you take a look at number 15. So I quote up to you from here from the Sefer Divrei Agada. This is a collection of Divrei Torah and Drashos from Rebbe Yashiv, Zech Tzadik Bevracha. So Rebbe Yashiv writes something amazing. And the truth is, I always felt bad articulating this question, but when Rebbe Yashiv said it, I felt very validated. This Mishnah always bothered me. Why? And it should bother you also. Why? If there's one thing you know, is you're never going to motivate people by putting them down. You will never get people to rise up and become great by telling them that they're nothing. You know, historically, there were two schools of Musar, right? There was the Shiflus HaAdam and Godless HaAdam. Shiflus HaAdam was the lowliness of man. Godless HaAdam was the greatness of man. So as you can imagine, the names are pretty descriptive. So Shiflus HaAdam said, you know how man is supposed to go through life? I'm a nothing, you're a nothing, we're all big nothings, I'm bigger nothing than you are. You know, it's nothing. It's man is nothing, man is insignificant, man is imperfect, man is flawed, man is dirty, man is that. Okay. Then there's another school of thought that says, God knows Adam, man is great. Man is vipatach sireyu ma'at melukim, as David HaMelech writes. We're only a little bit less than the Ribono Shel Olam. He created us like that. He created us with tzelem elokim. And this was an ongoing debate within the Jewish people. I'll tell you, just interestingly enough, just so you'll notice, the school of Shiflus HaAdam essentially died out. Died out. And it died out because nobody could live, people can't really endure under such a system like that. Because at the end of the day, one of the most important things that fuels us to succeed is a positive sense of self, is when we feel good about ourselves. If you don't feel good about yourself, then ultimately it's very hard to do anything of real significance because A, you don't feel that you can, right? And B, you don't feel that you're worth it. Godless HaAdam is all about building. So this Mishnah from Akavya Mahalalel always bothered me. Because whenever I read this Mishnah, I say, okay, so I come from a putrid drop, and I'm going down, and I'm going to become dirt and worms. Great. Now what am I supposed to do with that besides feel like I'm totally insignificant? And if the job is to feel insignificant, mission accomplished. But when I feel insignificant, that takes the wind out of my sails to accomplish anything. So look what Rabbi Yashiv writes in number 15. He says, L'chore kasha. So Rabbi Yashiv says, this Mishnah is problematic, difficult. Mato elis tielo v'adam, kasha yisvoni ma'ainu ba, she'enu ela hevel habelim, hevel habolim. She'ad shlom atzarti eni kedai, afar li b'chayi kavachor misasi. So Rabbi Yashiv says, what good does it do to think that I'm a nothing? What good, even if it's true, we are insignificant. We know that we're insignificant. You know, all a person needs to do is go, a person has to go to a levaya, and a person realizes that the end of all man is the same. And you go to a cemetery, and you see generations of people, and the world moved on. As great as they were, as important as they were, the world moves on without them, and that happens to all of us. That's a very humbling. We know, if we think about it, that we are somewhat insignificant in certain respect in the grand scheme of things. But says Rav Eliashiv, don't tell me that, because if you tell me that, it actually has a negative effect on me. He says, "Halo imira ha'adam esatzon kipachos shebchusin." If I see myself as a nothing among nothings, chaser arach, of little value, hare lo yargish shum achrayis l'maasov. A person will not feel any responsibility for his actions. Ki ma'ani, uman mi ani, uma'ani. The imkein yikshe alinu imalinu listakel psichos ha'adam ashal sati enikidai. Eich nucha lagir l'malas kadesh etzmechav moshemot b'motor locha. Shviyash says, I don't understand. If you want me to be a something, then what good does it do to tell me I'm a nothing? If you want me, if you tell me I'm a nothing, I'm going to feel like a nothing. And you know what happens? We know when people have very low self-esteem or no sense of self or no real self-worth, they don't feel that they don't feel that they can accomplish. They don't feel they're capable of accomplishing anything. They don't feel that they're worthy of anything good happening to them. So says Rav Eliashiv, Kaviyah ben Mahalalel, what are you doing to us? You're telling us that we're nothing, we come from nothing, we go to nothing, we have to stand in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, fear before. But if I feel like I'm nothing, then there's no achrayus for me to accomplish it. So Vayasha says something amazing. He says, Lo Kein. But Vayasha therefore says, I disagree. I disagree with Rekav Yemem HaHalalel. Now you're going to see he doesn't disagree in just a moment. Lo Kein. Im Yachshav Adam Shubal Yimachum Gavoa, Neshama Shenasata Bi Tahurehi. Rekav Yemem says, no, a person always has to remember, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Neshama that you gave me, it's pure. If a person realizes I was created to accomplish great things, I have the power to create worlds and to destroy worlds. That recognition, that understanding, creates a life responsibility. Therefore, the Gemara says, "Seeing that our Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us a holy soul, we have an obligation to spend our life, making sure that the soul we give back to God is just as pure, if not more pure, than the one He gave us." Take a look at number 16. Rav Eliashiv goes on one more paragraph. Ach ka'asher ha'adam choshen beino lebein atzmo machol vaso ba'olamo. When a person begins to contemplate, what is my job? What is my destiny? What is my mandate in life? A person has to remember, I'm not a little nothing. A person has to remember, I'm not insignificant. You know where I come from? My neshama was chiseled out from beneath the divine throne of glory. Let me tell you this outside. Rav Eliashiv says something absolutely amazing. Take a look for just one moment at number 14, at that Mishnah. You'll notice something stylistically strange about the Mishnah. Akavya ben Mahalalel seems to be repeating himself, right? He says, Histakel v'shlosha dvarim, v'yata bali de'avera. Right, look at three things and know, and you won't come to sin. What are the three things? Me ayin basa, where did you come from? La'ana taholik, where am I going? Me ata asid litein din necheshvo. Who do I have to give a life accounting for the way I lived my life? And then he goes on and says, and he fills in the blank. So Eliashiv asks, Akav Mahala, why do you have to say it like that? Well, there's an easier way to write the Mishnah. Well, how do you write the Mishnah? Histakel v'shlosha dvarim v'ata bali de'aveira. Look at three things and you won't come to sin. Number one. Me'ayin basa, mitiva strucha. La'ana tahot. Meaning, say the answer, say the question, and say the answer right afterwards. Why do you have to phrase all of the questions and then go back and restate the questions with the answers again? And Rav Eliashiv says so beautifully that Akavya ben Mahalalel is telling us that life is a choice. Histakel b'shlosha dvarin v'yata boli de'avera. There are two ways in life in which you could avoid sin. Two ways in life. One way, let's start with the second way. One way is to look at yourself as a nothing. Me'ayin basa, where did I come from? Tipa srucha, a putrid drop. Where am I going? I'm going back to the earth. And who am I going to have to stand in front of? The Ribono Shel Olam. So being that I'm a nothing, being that I'm insignificant, being that I'm not really worth anything, and I'm going to have to go in front of the Melech Malchei Hamelechim, I better do my best to keep my slate clean and avoid any performance of sin. That's one way you could live life and one avenue for the avoidance of sin. But says Rav Yashar, Akavim and Mahalal says, there's a higher calling. There's another option. There are three things you could do. What's number one? Duh! Me'ayin basa. Where do you think you came from? You notice, Akavim ben Mahalalel doesn't answer that question. Because he poses that question to the reader. Where do you think you came from? How do you view yourself? Do you view yourself as someone who came from the putrid drop? Or do you view yourself as someone whose soul was chiseled from beneath the divine throne of glory? Ula'an atahole. Where are you going in life? What do you want to do? What do you want to be? You know what the most exciting part is? You know why there's no answer to that? Because I get to write the script. Because I get to decide who I'm going to be, what I'm going to be, and where I'm going to go. And you want to hear the most exciting thing? You know what I'm going to give an accounting to? I don't fear giving an accounting. You know I don't fear giving accounting? Because after 120, I'm going to make sure that I come before the Ribbono Shel Olam confident that I live the best life possible with the circumstances that I encountered. Rav Yashiv says, Akavi ben Mahalalel is not trying to be a downer. Akavi ben Mahalalel is not trying to diminish us. He's not trying to crush us. Akavi ben Mahalalel is telling us that life is a choice. You could live life that you came from a tiba srucha. You could live life as a nothing from a putrid drop. Or you could choose to say, Me'ayin basa, and you answer that question by saying, Mitachas kisei hakavod, from underneath HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, what's amazing about this is, why is this important for us? Because I think that these two approaches of life, these two decisions we have to make, so we have to make a decision. Are we a tipa srucha person? When we answer, Me'ayin basa, where did I come from? Who am I? Am I tipa srucha? Am I kisei hakavod? La'an taholeh, bless you. Is the only destination the grave? Or am I accomplishing great things in life? After 120, I have to meet God. Is that something that sends me shivering in my boots? Or do I say, I'm excited because Ribbono Shel Olam, I want to show you what I accomplished. I want to show you what I did. That's the choice. And that choice is manifest in the two different types, or the two different categories of Kiddusha. If you remember again, if you go back for just a moment to number 13, if you remember, we asked the question. And this question we asked, we tried to contrast the two psukim. On one hand, earlier in Vayikra, number 13, it says, what's Kiddusha? Kiddusha is simply the avoidance of impurity. Just avoid sin and you're Kadosh. Avoid sin and you're Kadosh. Stay away from the creepy, crawly things and you're good to go. And we asked, how does that shtim, how does that work, how does that gel with Kiddushi Tiyu, which seems to be a higher level? And now we understand. Because the way you actualize your Kiddusha in life is fundamentally dependent on what? How you view yourself. If I view myself in line with the second statement of Akavi ben Mahalalel, and therefore I am a person from the Tipa Srucha, I am from the putrid drop camp, then the truth is, the most I can accomplish is the avoidance of impurity. The most I could accomplish is what we saw in number 13. Below, right, v'iskadash v'yisem kidoshim ki kadosh ani below sitamu es nafsho seichan. Just don't defile yourself. I'm already so defiled as it is. I'm already from that putrid drop. Do me a favor. Don't make yourself any more putrid. That's the most I could hope for. But if I decide, that's what? That when Akavi ben Mahalalel asks me the question, Da me'ayin basa, where am I from? And I choose to answer that question. Mitachas kisei hakavod. And when he asks me, La'an ata holeh, where am I going? I tell him, to do incredibly great things. And who am I going to give judgment for? I'm not afraid. I'm ready to face the Ribbono Shel Olam as long as I'm confident that I lived a good life. Then such a person has the ability to be Kiddushin Tiyu. Then for such a person, there are no ceilings. For the Vehiskad, Vehisem Kiddushin, for the Tipa Srucha Jew, there are glass ceilings. There's only so far you're going to get. There's only so much you're going to accomplish. But for the Jew who believes that he or she comes from underneath the kisei hakavod, the sky is the limit, and even the sky is not really the limit. For that person could live a life of kiddushin to you. And I want to show you something amazing. So again, just before we get to the amazing part, what we see is the Torah itself is giving us these two different models of kiddusha. The v'yisem kiddushin, which is the avoidance of impurity, and kiddushin to you, which means, again, you could choose any of our approaches from tonight, which means the active building of a spiritual, of a holy personality through dynamic life activity. And I want to show you the difference. If you look at something interesting, Yisen Kedoshim is Hove, is present tense. It's present tense. Because ultimately, if you are going to be a Tipa Srucha Jew, if I'm a nothing, then by definition, all I can do is really preserve that which I have, because I can't really accomplish all that much, because I'm not that special. I'm a Tipa Srucha. So the most I can do is preserve what I currently have. But interestingly enough, what tense is Kedoshim to you? It's Asid, it's future. Almost as if to say that if a person ultimately believes that they truly come from Itachas Kisei HaKavod, if I believe that I can accomplish great and incredible things, then ultimately, Kedoshim Tihyu, life is about constant growth. Life is about constant opportunities. Life is about constantly expanding my spiritual vistas and horizons. There is no limit to the person I can become. So if we bring this all together, we come out to, I think, something truly amazing. Sira Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us in two simple words that forever change the nature and the quality of our life, and even more profoundly, how we view ourselves. So again, we're not going to review again, but we saw our first six approaches to understanding Kedoshim Tihyu, but it's this last approach that I really want to drill home. This idea that there are two models of Kedusha. There is the Kedusha, which is the avoidance of impurity, and there is the Kedusha, which is the acquisition of additional levels of holiness. Which one do we subscribe to? That's a personal decision. The first decision we make in life is, how do we view ourselves? Which part of Akavya ben Mahalalel's statement do we choose to identify with? The first line, which is just the question posed to the reader, which we, the reader, are supposed to answer. Do we see ourselves from Itachas Kisei HaKavod, or are we simply the Tipa Srucha? And Halavai, we should all be Zocha, and Amir Hashem, we should constantly remind ourselves. If it was up to me, I think we should reprint the Mishnah without the second part of Akavya ben Mahalalel's statement. Because what a tragedy. And there are too many people that walk through life thinking that they're a Tipa Srucha. Too many people walk through life thinking that they're insignificant, that they can't accomplish anything. So the most that they're able to do is to preserve the Kedusha that's innate. And what a chaval, what a loss, what a tragedy. Halavai, we should be Zocha to always put the emphasis on the first part of that Mishnah. Me'ayin Basa, where do we come from? Literally from the lap, from the warm embrace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ula Anatolich, where are we going to accomplish incredibly great things? And because of that, even after 120, Ribono Shel Olam, I'm eager to see you. Not hastening my appointment with you. But when that time comes, I will be eager to see you because I want to tell you about my accomplishments. If we choose to be that tzura, that type of person, then ultimately we won't have to settle for a sort of Yisem Kedoshim. We won't have to settle for a preservation of holiness, but rather we will be able to accomplish Kedoshim Tihyu and grow in our personal spirituality and our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu each and every day. All right, let's stop over here.
Thank you very much.